Breakup fees. This is Brock.
And this is John.
First question, what is a breakup fee? I don't think it relates to getting paid out if someone breaks up with you in a personal relationship.
No, but boy, given my teenage years, I might have been a very wealthy man if they actually had required payment like that. But it's the same kind of concept. It's basically, you know, your heart balm for if you're a buyer, typically, if you get left at the altar by the seller, because there are all sorts of uncertainties about what fiduciary duties directors require and whether they can under what alignment of the planets may they enter into an agreement that obligates them exclusively to move forward. And that is quite a challenge. And so reading the judicial tea leaves a long time ago, deal planners decided the best approach was to come up with a breakup fee that gives you that consolation prize for the folks who get left at the altar by somebody who's doing another deal.
And to, I guess, drive this point home a little bit further, so the purpose of a breakup fee is to...
Well, it's twofold. It's first of all, it's to give the buyer some protection by giving the seller a downside for walking away from a deal to pursue a potentially better one. The analogy you gave about somebody breaking up with you, they may think twice about it if there are hoops to jump through and there's a payment to be made to do it. And the other is compensatory, that, you know, buyers are out of pocket, there's opportunity costs, there's a lot of sunk costs in these situations. If a seller is going to terminate the transaction, in order to accept a better one, an exercise of contract right, there ought to be some compensation in it for the buyer for that happening.
And the fee is typically listed in the merger agreement itself, so this is actually in writing.
Oh, sure, it's laid out in very great detail. The triggering events, the amount of the fee, the circumstances under which it's going to be payable, and all sorts of permutations. And they're all laid out in great detail in the contract.
So, what are the most typical common features of a breakup fee? Would you say?
Well, they're typically payable in situations where the seller's terminated the agreement to accept a better deal, or if the buyer's terminated because the seller hasn't complied with its obligations not to shop the deal, if it has failed to recommend the deal, or if it has changed its recommendation to its shareholders without complying with the terms of the agreement. In many cases, there may be some tail triggering payment if another deal is done within a certain period of time after the deal is terminated, and that's intended to sort of prevent strategic behavior on the part of an interloper in the seller. If somebody announces and dangles out a better deal, and the seller figures out ways to string the deal out without breaching its obligations under the agreement until the drop-dead date, terminates, and then does another deal and leaves the buyer high and dry. These tail fees or topping fees may come into play to protect the buyer from that situation. They're typically not too large. These are generally between 1-3% of the deal value, I think, is what most people see. 5% you might see in a very small deal, kind of reflecting the fact that there are some costs and some expenses that can get wound up in there that are going to be incurred regardless of the size of the deal. So sometimes that you do see higher percentages in smaller deals.
What about conducting research? Because when you're trying to negotiate, and it typically is, well, I guess it depends on the deal about how much time is spent negotiating a breakup fee. But is there a good place to conduct research to find out whether what kind of fees have been paid recently, or in what industry, or what size deals?
Yeah, I think first of all, the first place that I would go is to deallawyers.com, our breakup and termination fees practice area. We've got a lot of stuff there. We have surveys on what market practice is. We go back in history. You know, the most famous study of termination fees, I think, is Houlihan Lokey. They've been doing it for ages, and we've got many of their going back, I think, more than a decade. We have links to all the leading cases from Delaware and a whole bunch of other resources that are available for you to take a look at in terms of termination fee provisions. It's one of those things that there's an awful lot of stuff out there on because you know the mileposts were never particularly clear in Delaware. I mean, for years they would debate whether, well, it's between 1% and 5%, and then somebody said, well, is that equity value or is it enterprise value? And then we went back and forth batting that one back and forth. So strength in numbers has been the historic approach. So I think this is an area where precedent certainly does play a very, very big role in the negotiations.
And so how often do breakup fees actually get paid that a company's willing to back out of a deal and pony up the 1% to 3% of the deal value in order to get out?
I think the answer generally is not very frequently, but it depends on the market climate. If you've got an environment where private equity firms are dominant, then the deal tends to happen less than it does if you've got a bunch of strategic buyers in the mix for a very strategic property. But overall, I think it's a very rare occurrence. There are lots of advantages to having a signed merger agreement, and disrupting a deal is guts ball. I mean, if you want to step in between somebody and who has a signed contract, they've got to navigate their no shop clause, and they're going to expect you to give them a very, very high degree of certainty. You're not going to be able to tailor a merger agreement. You're going to pretty much have to take what's on the table. You're going to have to pony up the cost of paying any kind of a termination fee that they're subject to. You're going to be very tightly bound in any kind of situation like that, and you're going to be very limited in what you're able to do in terms of due diligence and that type of thing. So, you have to be really willing to put on your big boy pants if you're going to be disrupting. So it is somewhat unusual. It does happen, and when it does happen, it gets an awful lot of publicity. I think the one that I've always looked to is I think Rob Spatt at Simpson Thacher has been for more than 20 years surveying these deal jumping situations, and that's the jargon that people use to the practice of a third party launching a bid after a deal's been signed up. There are only a couple of handfuls of major deals that end up getting jumped in any given year, and so that's I don't know the exact percentages, and I don't know that Rob attempts to lay it out. It's mostly anecdotal, but it's pretty thorough. But it's a relatively small percentage where you would have a situation like this come up and actually trigger the payment of a breakup fee.
So it sounds like the purpose of a breakup fee is met.
Yeah, I mean it does. It may not be big, but it is a deterrent, along with everything else associated with having a deal in place. There is a big advantage to a first mover.
Great stuff. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.